Support for Pop of Culture comes from Stallings Wealth Management, Daniel Stallings Financial Advisor, securities and advisory services offered through Cetera Advisors, LLC, member FINRA/SIPC, a broker/dealer, and registered investment advisor. Cetera is under separate ownership from any other named entity.
This week on Pop of Culture, we're live to celebrate our 100th episode. We'll chat with NPR's Stephen Thompson about what's popping up in pop culture.
We'll dive into the history of East Central Indiana arts and culture with documentarian Chris Fluke.
We'll catch up with a few of our favorite What Are You Working On guests.
And we'll hear some audio that got cut from our previous 99 episodes.
That's coming up.
Support for Pop of Culture comes from Stallings Wealth Management, the Innovation Connector, and from you. With state and federal money eliminated, you are the difference in keeping local programming on the air at IPR. Become a member today at IndianaPublicRadio.org.
Live from Indiana Public Radio, this is Pop of Culture's 100th episode. I'm Michelle Kinsey.
I'm Kara Duquette.
I'm Maya Doss.
And I'm Jen Blackmer. Yay! We have an action-packed arts and culture hour for you today.
Coming up, we speak with filmmaker and local history expert Chris Fluke. We'll ask him about the history of the arts in East Central Indiana.
And later, we'll check in with some of our favorite What Are You Working On guests.
But first, we wanted to get a national perspective on where the cultural conversation is right now. So we called up NPR editor, writer, and host Stephen Thompson. In 2024, NPR Music's Stephen Thompson, co-creator of the Tiny Desk Concert Series and co-host on NPR's Pop Culture Happy Hour, joined IPR for its new station launch event. We invited him back for our 100th episode. And he said, yes, we were only 38 episodes in when you first joined us, Stephen. Can you believe that?
Now you are 62 episodes hotter.
Oh, my gosh. You did some math. I'm not even going to check your math on that because, quite frankly, I can't.
Well, you are talking to a former Wisconsin State mathlete, so.
Ooh, that's good. That's good information. I don't know that anybody knows that.
You heard it here first,
everybody. Well, I think the most important question we should ask right off the bat is, have you missed us?
I have. I had a wonderful time at your station opening. I loved talking to you on stage, talking to listeners, talking to donors, and just you know, being in an environment where people are excited about public media and excited about pop culture. That is my happy place.
Absolutely. Do you remember when you hit that first 100 episode milestone with Tiny Desk or Pop Culture Happy Hour? And if so, what was that like for you?
I do remember in both cases. Mm-hmm. I even remember the artist with the 100th Tiny Desk concert because it's one very near and dear to my heart, a guy who records under the name The Heligoats.
Yeah.
And it's a fantastic Tiny Desk. And having that feeling, you know, with both of those projects where you're not just trying something, now you're doing something. Mm-hmm. And I often say that the secret to success, the secret to creative success, at least in my world, has been have a good idea and then execute it hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of times.
Absolutely.
And very often that's the secret of success. If you don't find yourself kind of letting deadlines slip, and maybe we won't bother to do an episode this week, or I'm kind of busy, or this has kind of run its course. Things fizzle out like that all the time. Mm-hmm. But if you're able to just kind of keep cranking out shows, eventually you create this habit with listeners and this sense of trust with listeners that show is always going to be there.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So, and that was Tiny Desk. Do you remember hitting that milestone with Pop Culture Happy Hour?
I think we've hit it. We've hit it a kind of a number of different times in a number of different ways to the point where we now have absolutely no idea how many episodes we've done. In part because we've done long form episodes and short form episodes. Yeah. We used to just be weekly, and now we're daily. There are so many. There have been kind of so many different iterations of the show, and we've done enough reruns, and reruns kind of technically get counted in our system as new episodes, but we don't count those as new episodes. We've done. We figured it out at some point, and I think the last time I like did a social media post celebrating a pop culture happy hour milestone, we had just done our 2000th episode.
Wow.
And it's really that, and that really kind of takes you aback. And of course, with that show, we have four different hosts. So for each individual host, you can't say like, I've done 2000 episodes, because there are many of them that I'm not even on.
Right. Absolutely. But 100 still important, right? I mean,
oh, God. Michelle.
2000,
Michelle,
no one, big whoop. No.
Michelle, 100%. 100 is still important. Absolutely it is. You know how many like ghost ships are, yeah, are in, yes, in any given podcast feed where they've just stopped doing it?
Right.
Doing 100 episodes and still being excited about the show means that second 100 is going to happen, and you're going to be like, whoa, it's our 200th. Exactly. We forgot to celebrate.
Exactly. And you get to talk about things that you're truly excited about.
And
And speaking of that, what are you most excited about right now when it comes to pop culture?
I'm excited about the Oscar season being over. No, I, you know, right now, in terms of pieces of culture that I'm really enjoying, I'm really excited about the movie Project Hail Mary, which is out today. You know, kind of a space epic in the vein of The Martian or Gravity. Mm-hmm. You know, beautiful effects, really nicely acted, great to see in a theater if you can see it on one of those giant kind of IMAX screens. I recommend it. I'm really enjoying that. There are a couple of TV shows that I'm really excited to catch up on. Once I'm kind of through the Oscars kind of award season gauntlet, I've heard nothing but great things about Strip Law. I've heard nothing but great things about Reggie Dinkins, you know, with Daniel Radcliffe and Tracy Morgan. You know, and honestly, Michelle, I have to say, I'm watching Survivor 50 and I'm into it.
Wow. Now, have you watched every season?
Oh, Michelle. I have watched every season of Survivor.
And you're
hearing it here first. You want an exclusive. I'm working on a ranking of all 50 Survivor seasons. So I've been doing a full Survivor rewatch in my copious free time, and kind of writing essays about each season of Survivor and doing a ranking.
Wow. Well, while we're admitting to things of that sort, my weakness is Love is Blind.
Oh, I get it. I get it. I watched the first few seasons and kind of drifted away from it, but I completely understand letting yourself be hypnotized.
Oh my God. And every time a season starts, I'm like, this is ridiculous. What am I doing? I should not watch that. And there I am every time.
And then there
every
you are.
Every time.
I'm better than this.
And then next episode.
Cut to 9 hours later.
Exactly.
You not being
right.
Better than this.
Exactly. Let's shift to music, if we could. You listen to an astonishing amount of new music every year and share a lot of that with us during New Music Fridays. What's something happening in music right now that you think people should be paying attention to?
Ooh, boy, Michelle, that's a hard question. It's always so tricky because, you know, you mentioned Pop Culture Happy Hour and you mentioned Tiny Desk Concerts. I also host New Music Fridays for All Songs Considered, you know, which is an NPR music podcast. And we kind of round up the, you know, like the five albums you most need to hear that are out today, plus kind of a lightning round of some other recommendations. And it really is just drinking out of a fire hose, trying to kind of figure out, you know, what to talk about each week and what to say about the albums we do end up picking.
Yeah.
You know, as far as like overall trends in music, it's hard to step back, you know, from a 10,000 foot view and get a sense of like themes and trends that are worth keeping an eye on. All I can do is just sort of say, you know, there are some beautiful, beautiful records that kind of slip through the cracks, in part because there's so much stuff coming out each week. It's easy to kind of forget to go back and savor the stuff that you love. You know, I recently went back and revisited my favorite album of 2025, Lux by Rosalia, the Spanish singer.
Yes.
And this album is so audacious and so beautiful.
It
brings in all these amazing guests and like classical musicians and like opera musicians and composers.
Yeah.
And her voice is so gorgeous. And she sings in 13 different languages.
Yeah.
And in a way, it's such an audacious piece of art that you don't want to listen to it the way you would listen to, like, not to suggest that these aren't pieces of art, but like, you're not going to listen to the Rosalia record the same way you listen to the new Bruno Mars record or the new Harry Styles record.
Yeah.
It's so much more thematically and musically ambitious that to me, like, one of the hardest kind of 10,000 foot view things to do in music is take a step back. And when you hear something that is truly transcendent and wonderful, don't just forget about it because it's not time to talk about it anymore.
Ah, I love that. I love that. And I really appreciate that you and others at NPR Music happily listen to so much music and then kind of curate and bring to our attention some things we should be listening to. So I really appreciate that. And I know there are a lot of people listening right now that appreciate that as well.
Thank
okay,
you.
Let's have some fun. I've got 100 rapid fire questions. I'm just kidding.
Six, 14. Barbados.
I'm kidding. Absolutely, absolutely. Okay, ready? It's just a few. It's not anywhere near 100. But the best concert you've seen recently, and tiny desk performances count.
Oh my gosh, this is so hard. Oh my gosh, we just published a Tiny Desk concert with Maddie Diaz, who is just one of my favorite singer-songwriters. Her voice absolutely rips my heart out, massages it gently, and then puts it back where it was, better than it found it. She is such an amazing singer and such a great songwriter. And her Tiny Desk, like, I just went and blubbered like a baby.
Aww, I love that. An artist you think is about to have a huge breakout moment.
Oh boy. I'm going to go with an actor. I'm going to go with Jack O'Connell. He's an actor. He is the lead bad guy in both Sinners and 28 Years Later, The Bone Temple.
Yes.
And he plays like the lead Jimmy, if you've seen Bone Temple. He's so creepy.
Yeah.
And, you know, I just, you know, spent more time with Sinners, and you watch his work in there where he's singing beautifully in addition to being like such a creepy and hypnotic presence.
Yes.
I just think that guy is kind of due for that, like, Jesse Buckley breakout where all of a sudden we're talking about him at awards season.
Absolutely. One musician you'd love to interview but haven't yet.
Oh boy. I mean, any number. Let's go with Tracy Chapman.
Ooh. That's a good one.
You know, the kind of fast car renaissance that happened in 2023 when Luke Combs covered that song.
Yes.
And all of a sudden, Tracy Chapman like resurfaced for a minute and performed at the Grammys. And I was just like, man, what I wouldn't give.
Oh.
She was just such a huge gateway for me. You know,
absolutely.
I grew up in a small town in the middle of Wisconsin. Mm-hmm. I was just outside the reach of the nearest college radio station. And fast car blew doors open for me as far as what music could say and what it could mean. And, you know, she just continues to be like a lifelong favorite.
Absolutely. Well, let's all send good vibes out there for that. Everyone listening right now, we're going to manifest this 2026. If you could recommend just one song for a road trip through Indiana, what would it be?
Oh, boy. Well, you know what? I'm going to recommend this. It's an album from about 20 years ago by a singer-songwriter named David Mead. Mm-hmm. And the album is called Indiana. And the lead song is about driving through Indiana, which those of us from different Midwestern states who now live on the East Coast can really relate to the experience of driving through Indiana.
Yeah.
So if I'm doing a road trip through Indiana, that's the record I'm pulling out.
I love that. Stephen, if NPR had a theme song for 2026, would you nominate?
Something chaotic and terrifying. do you know the group Mr. Bungle? Mr. Bungle, it's Mike Patton from Faith No More. And,
oh, okay.
And
yeah,
so
I know Faith No More,
And sometimes their songs are just like... Bleh! That would be the soundtrack for 2026.
Wow. Mr. Bungle. Got it. And one final question, Stephen. Yeah. Any advice for the Pop of Culture team for our next 100 episodes?
Just keep leaning into talking about things you love and keep, you know, to keep taking the things you love seriously. Trust your audience, lean on each other. Remember that joy is an essential part of the human diet. And, you know, sometimes I think when you're in the business of talking about pop culture, people can kind of come at you like, why are you talking about that? That's not as important as what's going on in the world, or that's not as important as what's going on in government. And just remember that those things are vital. They're vital to being human. Joy is vital to being human, and that you're doing good and important work, even if it doesn't feel like you're saving the world. You're still giving people kind of a pop of joy, and that's one of the most important things you can do in trying times.
Absolutely. Well, Stephen Thompson, thank you for bringing so much joy to our 100th episode. We really appreciate it.
It is my pleasure. Anytime. Bring me back for 150. Bring me back for 200.
You
Happy
got it. You
it.
Heard that, everybody. All right. We'll see you then.
Talk to you soon.
All right. Thank you so much.
Bye.
Hey, hey, now that my mic is working, we're going to step away for 30 seconds. When we come back, we will step into history with local historian, documentarian Chris Fluke. This is Pop of Culture, live from IPR.
I'm Kara Duquette. You're listening to Pop of Culture. This is a local arts and culture show, so we wanted to focus on why East Central Indiana is so rich in both art and culture. We are in studio with Chris Fluke. Chris is a storyteller, an educator, a filmmaker, a writer, and a historian at the Delaware County Historical Society. Chris, welcome back to the program. Thank you for being here.
Thanks for having me.
Of course. Let's jump right in. I want to know, what groups and institutions do you feel played a part in creating Muncie's early arts and culture history?
One of the first things that Muncie did when it got money, and so it was kind of this poor rural agricultural backwater up until basically the Civil War. The railroads come in, and then there starts to become industry. So one of the first things in the 1870s, when Muncie had money, sort of a land baron by the name of Jacob Henry Weiser builds an opera house, and it was just south of the courthouse, and was known as the Weiser's Opera House. And it brought in plays, a lot of Shakespeare, Frederick Douglass spoke there. So it was an event venue, you know? Mm-hmm. And then vaudeville is this American form of variety entertainment. And
the old vaudeville.
The old vaudeville, yeah. Musicians and professional wrestling and just all kinds of crazy stuff. It becomes enormously popular in the United States, and Muncie becomes a major stop. And then all of a sudden, beginning in the 1880s, when gas was discovered, then all of a sudden Muncie becomes very wealthy. So does Marion, so does Kokomo, so does Anderson. And so all these places then start adding vaudeville theaters. And at one point, Muncie had 12 vaudeville theaters, movie houses, Nickelodeons, all within a 5 or 6 block radius.
Oh, and you were talking a little bit about the placement of Muncie geographically. Yeah. Can you talk about that a little more?
So Muncie really got big vaudeville acts, big stage productions too, from Broadway. So New York, as it is today, is still kind of the center of all this. But the rail lines all went to Chicago. All the main rail lines went through Chicago, and many of them came right through Muncie. And so there might be a 3-day show in Chicago on the weekend and a 3-day show in Cleveland on the weekend before, but they would stop Wednesday or Thursday, and these big acts would then come to Muncie. And so Muncie, you know, was prominent, but not as big as obviously as Chicago, but it got access to all these really cool, you know, entertainment things in a time when a lot of communities did not.
Oh, that's amazing. So there's a big interplay there between the money and the creativity and the rail. That's exciting. So is there a historical group or space that you wish was still around to provide culture?
I wish there was a movie theater downtown. Oh. I mean, there are obviously cities, all of the United States still has it. I love that the AMC theater is here, mm-hmm. but it's not downtown. It doesn't have the same kind of vibe. Star Theater, which was put in the Boyce Block around 1906, 1907 as a refined vaudeville. Then it became the Hoosier Movie Theater, and now it's Muncie Civic. So in some ways, that legacy is still there in a different kind of entertainment. And then Cornerstone, Center for the Arts, and Masonic Temple has one of the nicest theaters in downtown. So they're not completely gone, but I have this romantic fantasy about going downtown and like going out to eat and then going to a movie, which you really can't do, you know, downtown because there aren't any theaters.
Well, so you say there's a theater in Cornerstone. Do they show movies? I mean, I think...
They do now because they Epson, which makes these really cool projectors, mm-hmm. and they Epson donated this really high-end 4K projector, nice. Laser projector, and so they mounted it, and so you get 4K projection in this beautiful old 100-year-old theater. It's not a movie theater, but you could run movies and shows and stuff like that and give people that kind of traditional experience.
Talking about this, it makes me really excited about the possibility for, you know, a lot of vaudevillian, like, variety show experiences.
Yeah, well, interestingly enough, Laura Williamson, who mm-hmm. runs Muncie Civic,
yes.
Laura, somehow, it was just she inherited it when she came into Civic, but she had, like, about 100, they're called cabinet cards, but they're basically like baseball cards.
Okay.
And it was all these vaudeville actors and actresses that had performed in Muncie.
Oh, wow.
Beginning, I looked it all up, found all their performances, basically from 1892 until about the World War I. And she thought that they were from Star Theater, but they were actually from the Weiser Grand Opera House. And at least all their performances were always at Weiser. And like, these are big names and like people that like were in Broadway. And then they got into the early silent film actors and actresses. Some people made it all the way to the radio era. And then the sound movie era. And so it was cool to see that these people came to Muncie, and like Muncie was this major stop for a lot of early people, you know, early entertainment and Hollywood people.
Well, and you were talking about, downtown being dotted with different venues. So like the opera houses, and then what are some of the other
My favorite venue types? Were the Nickelodeons, and you know, the station Nickelodeon, right? Well,
right.
They were, that comes from an old early film. Early film was not movies like 90 minutes like we know today. They mm-hmm. were essentially like Instagram reels. They were like these short things that would repeat.
Ooh, what is old is new again.
Yeah, that's exactly right. We just like basically reinvented the same thing in new technology. What you do is you go and pay a nickel and you'd go into this theater and it'd be a standing room only, and you just, it'd be just run movie after movie after movie after movie. You know, it's gross because it'd be everyone was smoking cigarettes and like, but people loved it. And there was a period of half those theaters were called Nickelodeons. And one of them was the Vermeys, the restaurant that just went out downtown.
Oh,
that was
yes.
a Nickelodeon.
Oh.
There was something called the Theatorium. And there was just, you just paid a nickel and went in and watched this stream of content. And it'd be like simple stuff like a fireman putting out fires. It wasn't like narrative content, but it was just like animated reels that we even watch today on TikTok.
Well, yeah, we love to watch like kittens rolling around, you know?
Yeah, same stuff.
Similar. Well, I want to know, what was one of the first pieces that you saw in Muncie that made you stop and think, there's a story behind that?
That would be Appeal to the Great Spirit. It's become, unfortunately, it's become the icon for Muncie. It's a beautiful statue. It was made by Cyrus Dolan. It's a replica of the one in the originals in Boston.
Mm, yeah.
In fact, one time when I was in Boston at the Boston Museum of Art, I walked out. I'm like, oh, they have a copy of our statue. And it's like, no, it's the other way around. We have the copy. It was put here to honor Edmund Burke Ball. He, one of the five Ball brothers, he died, and the Balls and many others were trying to improve the area around the river. And so uh-huh. they put a statue right there at the river as an homage. That story has then become to be its chief Muncie. It's been conflated with the local Native. It's not. It has nothing to do with local Native Americans at all. It's there to honor Edmund Ball. And they picked this sculptor that was really prominent at the time that was sculpting.
Okay.
But then it made me realize the value of the public art, and then how that definition then changes over time. So we kind of, the community has kind of forgotten about the homage to Edmund Ball, and it's become something else.
Yeah. So you think there's a lot of public art in Muncie that reflecting the changes that are coming at this point?
Yeah, I do think that there's people here that have a concerted effort to make public art viable. And like, I don't think it ever went away, but it's, there are people that are actively with statues and architecture and river improvements and green spaces. And so like, you know, we all want to, at least I want to live in a great city. And part of that is having beautiful spaces, architecture. And there are people that I think are making that a concerted effort in the 21st century.
Yeah. It's, loving where you live has a lot to do with the beauty that surrounds
you. That's right.
Well, thank you so much.
Yeah.
Chris Fluke is a filmmaker and writer, among many other things. You can read his regular history column, Bygone Muncie, in the Star Press. But right now, you're listening to Pop of Culture from IPR.
This is Pop of Culture. I'm Michelle Kinsey.
And I'm Maya Das. We spend a lot of time on this show every week, editing interviews, writing scripts, recording voiceovers. So it might surprise you that we're not always perfect.
What? If you're a regular Pop podcast listener, you've heard some of our outtakes and bloopers before, but there's an entire folder dedicated to this stuff. Here's just a taste.
This is Pop of Culture from IPR. Perfection. I apologize. Shut your face hole.
That was my perfection ding.
Yeah, right, that's exactly right.
This week on Pop of Culture, we're back to school. Grab your knapsack and join us.
What the hell year is it? Knapsack?
What the hell year is it?
Indiana Public Broadcasting's Tony Sandoval. Sandoval. What reports? San Laban. Say it, San Laban.
There you go. We're going to Wisconsin. So I don't think I've ever been to Wisconsin, so I'm excited to visit Wisconsin. So there we go.
Well, I think they're...
They have cheese, apparently.
Yeah, they've got a big thing on cheese over there, so give it a shot.
Oh. Well, I like cheese.
Give it a beat or two.
Indy, San Laban?
San... The exact
way it's typed. San Laban. San Laban.
The test check, 1-2, big bats up to 155, down cross, over up the thing, though.
That's the best mic check we've ever had. Ever.
And finally, Moons of Mystery explores the man moons of our soul. The man. Is it main moons?
I think it was just meant to be moon.
Okay.
I like the idea of a man moon, but you know.
Bow chicka bow.
Oh no, it's back. Pop of Culture After Dark.
Indiana Public Broadcasting's Tony Sandoval reports.
San Laban.
You're doing so well. You're still doing well. Oh, thank you. This is awesome. Okay, awesome. I made him laugh too much. He does that all the time.
Okay, good. Our show host was hosted by... Oh, wait. That's me too. Maya Das.
And me, Michelle Kinsey. Pop of Culture is a production from IPR on the campus of Ball State University. Now, I thought you were going to ever do it again. So I just waited. It sounded like I wasn't thrilled at all. And me.
Indiana Public Broadcasting's Tony Sandoval. Laban. San Laban.
And hosted by me, Michelle Kinsey.
And me, Jen Blackmer.
Did you forget your name? Our show was hosted by me, Michelle Kinsey.
And me, Kara Duke. My God.
Listen, that's going on the blooper reel. Kara Duke, my God.
Indiana Public Broadcasting's Tony Sanlabin reports.
My favorite pop memory is probably when I came on as a guest before I was ever a radio co-host. Michelle actually interviewed me, and I remember just how validated I felt as a local artist to get such an amazing platform.
Yeah, we've had a lot of great moments on the show. Jen, what's yours?
Just now when I heard Kara trying to
say it, Kara, say it.
I think we're putting her on the spot right now, yeah?
Do it.
Sanlabin.
Yes! I can learn.
Seriously, some of the interviews that stand out for me were the interview we did with Rose Elliott and the way she is learning to use a fiber art technique, pillow making, to remember her father. I think that one of the things that sticks out as well, too, is just learning as much as I've been able to learn about things that are not what I normally do.
100%.
You know, going to live music and all the local artists doing and producing great work.
Yeah, meeting new artists, talking to other artists that you know and you love their work, but maybe you haven't met them or you totally know them. One of my favorites is episode one, season one.
Wow, taking it back.
Yeah. I have to. Levi Rinker, you know, you don't forget your first interview.
Yeah. That's right. And he's become a great friend of the show. I mean, we check in with him often, and that's very, very cool. Mine is got to be the music, introducing people to musicians in and around the area, and especially when we get the opportunity to go on location and hear them in studio or in concert at a dive bar, wherever it is.
Yeah,
I mean,
absolutely.
That's kind of my jam, pun intended.
And experiencing, one of the great things about radio, too, that I've learned while doing this is just the immersive nature of it, and that became clear to me when I heard the interview we did at Minnetrista with the creators of the Night in the Forest exhibit.
Yes,
you know, and how that, when I listened to the experience of that, it felt like being there. It was awesome.
Absolutely.
We've gone to studios. You never know where we're going to pop up.
That's right.
Pop up. Pop. I see what you did there. And I don't know, getting to work with all of you.
Yes, absolutely.
The best.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And I have to slip that in. As anytime I see a calendar alert pop up from Luke Jones and I accept it to come to the studio and do something, I know it's going to be the highlight of my day.
Absolutely.
And it has been. Yeah.
Absolutely. And like Stephen Thompson was saying earlier this hour about, you know, finding joy and leaning into the passion of what we do here. I don't think we have a problem with the passion part of it at all. And that's what I love about this team. We each bring, you know, our own passions, but also that desire to learn something right along with the audience, right?
Oh, yeah. Absolutely.
Bringing people out from our local culture and arts community is really amazing too, because you don't even realize just how much depth and hidden, maybe from you, passions and things that people are doing right here in our hometown.
Oh, for sure. And as we hit this milestone of 100 episodes, it's the community is so gracious and so happy to have us here and talk to us. And that makes me happy.
During this time, I've had the privilege of chatting with several artists who are not here, not from Muncie.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And they either have Midwestern roots or they're working in another area in this, you know, part of the country. And I've talked to folks from Wisconsin and Nebraska and Missouri and Tennessee. And they're always amazed by Muncie and East Central Indiana and what we've got going on here. And, you know, we have these moments where we kind of talk and chat before we actually turn the mics on for the show. Mm-hmm. And in every single one of those conversations with folks, it's been like, wow, you're doing that? We're like, yeah, absolutely. And it, you know, makes me very proud to live here.
Absolutely. You know what else is great, and I'm sure we can all relate, is when you're out and about, and we've all had those like NPR moments, right? Oh, I heard this on NPR, but how many hands up in the room? Well, I guess we shouldn't do that since we're on the radio, but just give me a quick shout out that you've been out and about and people say, oh, I heard that on Pop of Culture, or I know about this artist, this exhibit, this event, this concert, because I heard it on Pop of Culture.
Absolutely.
And the warm and fuzzies that you feel when you hear that. Because I'll hear just random people talking, not people talking directly to me, but they're just saying, oh, yeah, I heard on Pop Culture last week that da-da-da-da-da was happening.
I had somebody come up to me in the pharmacy. They overheard my voice talking to the person, and I don't know if this was embarrassing or not. Maybe it was, but they said, are you on that show that they do on IPR about arts and culture? And I was like, yep, that's me.
Couldn't be embarrassing. You guys have such prolific voices, honestly. So easy to recognize.
Right back at you, Maya Doss.
Oh, thank you. Thank you. I have to say, like, coming out of the PMX program was also an amazing experience for me because here at Ball State, they encourage students to get involved with the station. Mm-hmm. And I came into this feeling so nervous, but everyone really helped encourage me, build me up stronger. And I couldn't be more grateful for you guys for that.
Oh, that's awesome. And if you want to know more about the PMX program, it's a fellowship program for students. You can go to indianapublicradio.org to learn more about that because we don't have time to do that today. We got more pop culture to talk about.
And keep listening to Pop of Culture because we're going to bring you more.
And we've got more show to do, but we wanted to remind you, if you've missed anything so far, the Pop of Culture podcast will be available later today. You can find it on NPR One, Apple Podcasts, YouTube, Spotify, or at indianapublicradio.org. You can also find us right after this break from IPR.
This is Pop of Culture. I'm Jen Blackmer.
And I'm Michelle Kinsey. We're broadcasting live today.
Oh, yeah, woo-hoo! We are. When we first came on the air in 2024, we brought you a segment we called What Are You Working On? Affectionately known as WAWO. Mm-hmm. For our 100th episode, we are taking a look back. In December of 2023, the Pop team had a meeting where we gathered ideas for our new show. Our soon-to-be co-host, Michelle Kinsey, brought a full page of ideas, including one that said,
and every week we interview an artist and ask them, what are you working on?
And from there, Kara Duquette got to work. Our first interview was with Levi Rinker.
Hi, my name is Levi Rinker, and I am the economic development specialist for the city of Anderson, and my focus is on downtown revitalization strategies is one hat that I wear. The other hat, I'm a, I guess, co-founder and art director at a local artist cooperative that we found downtown.
So you're kind of driving the revitalization beat in downtown Anderson.
Yeah, right. I put on my tap shoes and do a little dance. Maybe put on my cheerleading skirt. Go team, you know?
Levi told us about the artist alley he was working on in downtown Anderson. Levi himself constructed arches on each side of the alley and asked other artists to paint panels.
So these panels, are they like relief? Are they flat paint? Could you describe a little bit about it?
Yeah, I mean, originally the concept was just, you know, a 4x8 treated plywood board and paint on it. But again, you know, you give artists a few specs and parameters and, you know, they're going to bend it. And yeah, so we have pieces that, you know, break the plane, more three-dimensional, sculpturesque.
As we looked back across three seasons of WAWO, we reached out to a few artists and asked them, what are you working on now? Levi sent us this update for 2026.
So this year for the Artist Alley, we are getting ready for our fourth annual show that will be opening May 1st on the First Friday Art Walk. This year for the exhibition, we're opening up submissions to all ages in the community, trying to get as many as 56 young artists from our local school districts showcasing their creative works. We've expanded the Artist Alley now into four locations downtown, hanging the previous year's works in different spots, connecting the Anderson Museum of Art to Dickman Town Center Plaza throughout the business district. This year, we're doing some major light enhancements and adding another partner with the Historical Society of Madison County, where we'll be adding 9 panels of illustrations by artist Philip George, who's depicting the history of Madison County over the years. So really excited for this expansion this year. Looking to get so many people involved and walking downtown. We're excited for it.
Another one of our early asks was Molly Shaler.
My name is pronounced Molly Shaler, not Shaler, which it often happens to be used that way. And my husband actually had to tell me that I was pronouncing his name wrong about 2 months into our dating process. He let me know I had that all wrong. So it's common. It happens to all of us. As far as my work goes, I definitely am a creative. I've been making things all my life, practically compulsively.
When we talked to her in season one, Molly was engaging her community through art by restoring jewelry.
And I have had the best time talking with people about their stories and their loved ones and these objects, and either remaking them into something that suits their current style and fashion, but still like echoes back to your aunt's great aunt Sally's story, or just repairing it in a way so that let's say that maybe there was a piece that you bought on your vacation and you really loved it, but when you actually put it on, it always falls in a funny way and it doesn't quite work with your body. So I get to talk with people about what these objects that they love, and then I get to work with them to remake them into something that they can enjoy all the time and wear close to their bodies.
When we reached back out for an update, no surprise here, she wanted to share her latest community and arts connection.
I'm working on a project called Pressing Matters, a community jelly printing initiative here in Muncie. If you've never heard of jelly printing, it's a monoprinting technique that's incredibly accessible. No press, no experience needed, just a soft gel plate, some acrylic paint, and a brayer. The results are these beautiful, one-of-a-kind prints. I hosted 2 sold-out workshops at Majax this winter, and I'll be hosting workshops around town for people of all ages, from kids to seniors, at community spaces people already know and love. Then we'll bring the prints together in a group show in Muncie, because art is for everyone.
Since those earliest days, we've asked over 60 artists and arts organizers what they're working on. We've talked to local painters.
Well, I am finishing up the last of a series of 6 ecosystem paintings. I've been working on them for over 15 years now.
These are primarily acrylic with some collage work, and they're inspired by my personal alchemy of more negative or difficult emotions. I've self-guided myself through art therapy for about a decade now.
I wanted to get out of my head, literally on the floor throwing paint around. And that's what led to a lot of new discoveries.
We've thrown down with potters.
Once I started throwing, I never looked back. It was so much fun.
Even before I started working on these robots, it was the clay that kind of brought my strength back in my hands and allowed me to kind of recover from that.
And folks all across the artistic spectrum.
I tested some things out. I tested new lighting. I tested new ways to color grade. So I'm really excited to show some growth in my photography and in my art.
I've just got a ton of, I've got a lot of pieces of wood. And so, you know, I kind of look at everything that I have and I say, oh, this would be interesting here. And I think, what if I put this next to that?
Yes, I'd hope to be hip deep in diamonds, but they're a poor substitute for what I really crave. A bona fide hero to help me feel whole. For without a hero, what am I? Half a villain, a pirate in part, ruthless but toothless.
That's Sean Orlowski, one of our favorite local voices. You can see him around town.
Busy days for yours truly. I'm currently hopping back and forth between 2 of my favorite theatrical stomping grounds. At Muncie Civic Theater, I'm currently painting the set for the upcoming world premiere of a brand new comedy, The West Wind, written by my great pals John and Jenny Marsh, which will open on March 20th at the Casaza Family Studio Theater upstairs at the Muncie Civic. and I'm going to be back on the boards myself a week later on March 27th when I open along with an incredible team of folks led by director Mason Llewellyn in Thornton Wilder's Pulitzer Prize-winning classic Our Town at Guyer Opera House in Newcastle. To all my friends and fellow creatives out there, keep inspired, keep creating, and keep having fun!
Some of the artists we speak to are making work for fun, some are building their community, and some are working on personal projects.
We made a pillow out of my dad's shirts. He recently passed July 18th, 2024. Mm-hmm. And we thought, I mean, he has a lot of shirts, so we wanted to kind of incorporate that and just have it around the house for hugs.
We often say that What Are You Working On is where we talk to artists both full-time and free-time. That's because any time dedicated to art is important to this show. You are important to this show. Thank you for helping our team with what we've been working on.
Oh, that was awesome. I love the Weiwo. That was a great compilation, Jen. Bravo. Guess what time it is? Ladies.
Oh, is it that time?
What?
Oh, you know it is. Amazing.
It's time for the arts calendar.
Live.
What? Yes, live. Yeah, I know. What could go wrong, as Jen said earlier this week? Yeah. All right, I'll kick it off. We'll see how it goes. America's Hometown Jazz Band will present A Journey Through Jazz History on Sunday, March 22nd. The band will perform a variety of jazz styles spanning the decades. The music begins at 3 p.m. in St. Andrew Presbyterian Church in Muncie.
All aboard! Woo-hoo! Yeah, we did that. The West Wind opens this weekend at Muncie Civic Theater. This is a new original play written by Muncie residents Jenny and John Marsh. You'll ride the rails across turn-of-the-century America in this heartwarming comedy about finding friendship, purpose, and inner strength. MuncieCivic.org is the place to go for more info.
The Jellicoe Ball is this weekend at Emmons Auditorium. The musical Cats, presented by Ball State's Theater and Dance Department, will pounce, claw, and chase its tail on stage today through Sunday. If memory serves me well, this production is this weekend only.
A Spring Forward Dance is tonight, March 20th, at the Muncie, Delaware County Senior Citizen Center. This dance, open to anyone age 18 and older, will definitely put some spring in your step from 7 to 10 p.m.
Muppet Pleasure Island. I'm going to say that again, friends. I'm going to say it again. Muppet Pleasure Island Burlesque, Drag, and Aerial Show is Saturday, March 21st at Mad Jack's in downtown Muncie. All of your favorite Muppets will be there, sort of, in ways you've never seen them before. It's time to start the music and light the lights. The Muppet Mayhem starts at 10 p.m.
I'm glad you said that twice because I wasn't sure I heard it right the first time. Did you know more than 300 handbell musicians are in Muncie for a conference right now?
Yeah, that rings a bell.
Oh, God. I had to do it. Handbell Musicians of America will perform a closing concert at 5:30 p.m. Saturday, March 21st at the Horizon Convention Center. The concert is open to the public.
Little known fact, I played the bells in high school, middle C.
I know that now. Go, Kara.
Awesome. Had we known before, you could have been a Weiwo.
Anderson is the place Saturday for the Mad Little Spring Market featuring local makers, artists, plant folk, and small batch creators along Main Street from noon to 6 p.m. And down the road a little ways is Marion's Spring Equinox Extravaganza. That's hard to say.
Oh, that was nice. I like the emphasis you put on that.
Happening today through Sunday, you'll find workshops, vendors, plant sales, art, and more.
The Women of Song concert will be 7:30 p.m. March 24th at Ball State's Sursa Performance Hall. Enjoy a celebration of music featuring Ball State's Vox Anima, Indy's White River Sound, and Anderson University's Vola Voce.
And that is part of a larger Women's Week situation, a schedule at Ball State University. And as a... Who said that?
That was me.
Yeah! Fantastic!
Women's
Go women! Woo. Go women! That was lovely. As a reminder, Anderson's Artist Alley is looking for, well, more artists. This year for the Anderson Artist Alley exhibition, they are opening up submissions for all ages in the community. They would love to get as many as 56 young artists from school districts showcasing their creative works. Submission deadline's coming up, people. It's March 27th. Go to atowncenter.org. for more details. And we would love, don't we love to hear from people in the community about their artsy events?
Yes, there's a reason why we love this, why we love doing the calendar.
Yeah, that's exactly right.
There is.
Yeah, so what you need to do to get your information heard on the arts calendar every week is send us those events. I'm simple, right? Send your artsy events, artist callouts, and more to us at indianapublicradio.org/contact. Then all you have to do is click Pop of Culture. Very simple. We love sharing all of these events every week.
Absolutely.
Support for Pop of Culture comes from Stallings Wealth Management, the Innovation Connector, and from you. With state and federal money eliminated, you are the difference in keeping local programming on the air at IPR. Become a member today at indianapublicradio.org.
And that's our show. We did it, friends. Woo! Our executive producer and interim general manager is Angie Grimes.
Our director of audio operations is Sean Ashcraft.
Our art director is Tracy Lauk.
Our digital content god is August Wild.
Our fact checker and ethics curator and today's studio producer is Stephanie Wigman.
Yeah. Our audio fellow is Maya Doss.
We had production assistance from Andrew Montavon.
This week was produced by Luke Jones, who has spent 100 episodes fixing our mistakes and quietly judging all of them.
Yep. Thank you.
Special thanks this week go to Chris Fluke, Casey Alexander, and Jack Ringenberg.
Our show was hosted by me, Kara Duquette.
And me, Maya Doss.
And me, Jen Blackmer.
And me, Michelle Kinsey. Pop of Culture is a production of IPR on the campus of Ball State University.